Welcome to It's a Good Life, the podcast for entrepreneurs, where it's all about growing yourself and your business. Here's your host, founder of America's largest business coaching company, Brian Buffini.
Well, the top of the morning to you, and welcome to It's a Good Life. Our guest today is a speaker, author, podcaster, Laura Vanderkamp, and she had my all-time favorite quote. You guys know me as a guy with all kinds of quotes. My all-time favorite quote of last year was attributed to her, and I'll talk about that in a second. You may have heard me mention her. You may have seen her brilliant TED Talk on time management, those brilliant TED Talk that's been seen by millions of people. Her mission is to bring calm to the chaos and make time for what matters most. Laura, that's about the most perfect title for our audience I've ever had. Welcome to the show. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And you're living in Philadelphia, which I wouldn't consider the calmest city in the world. You know, I went to Philadelphia 37 years ago, and I was very close to where the Liberty Bell was. And I say to this guy, it was a Sunday morning, and I say, "Excuse me, sir, could you tell me where the Liberty Bell is?" And he points at his baseball cap and he goes, "You see this hat? Does it say tour guide on it?" That's beautiful. I'm in Philadelphia.
City of brotherly love sometimes, I guess.
Well, so glad to have you. Excited to expose our audience to your new book, Tranquility by Tuesday. We're going to dive in there. I think you have some fantastic practical ways. You know, I love the fact that you're talking about how to get to calm, how to get to tranquility. You're a mother of five. You've got two podcasts, best-selling books. You're going all the time. It's a heck of a lot easier than listening to some 28-year-old who just goes to yoga twice a week, and then she's teaching on being calm. And many of us have very, very, very busy lives. I'm going to start, though, with this quote, because I've quoted it at every event I did last year. I'd have the audience repeat it back to me, which was your quote that says, instead of saying I don't have time, try saying it's not a priority and see how that feels. Instead of saying I don't have time, try saying it's not a priority and see how that feels. I think it's a brilliant concept. There's so much to it. I'm trying to help people take action on things that are important to them to achieve their goals, and they're procrastinating, putting it off, doing those kinds of things. We're coaching them up. We're trying to work them through this thing. When you got into this world of time management, obviously, you know, that quote kind of communicates that because it's priority management. How did you get into this whole space in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always been interested in schedules and trying to get a lot done. I can sort of trace that back through my life. But certainly, I mean, we talk about having kids and the chaos associated that. When I became a parent for the first time, I sort of realized I was going to have to think about my time in different ways, right? Like, it's not just the yoga class twice a week that you're trying to balance with everything else you're doing. It's people who need you 24/7. And there's all sorts of unpredictability that can come with it. I mean, we were just talking before the show how it's a snow day here in lovely Philadelphia. And so my kids are home and there's somebody watching them right now, but they could start diving into my recording studio. We never know. We'll figure that out if the time comes. But yeah, you have to think about your time differently. And there's so many competing demands for our time. And I sort of realized along the way, though, that when things are truly important to us, we tend to make space for them. And I see this in people's schedules all the time. You know, you could tell yourself, I don't have time for X, Y, or Z. And then there's some crisis. And suddenly you have to make time for that crisis, whatever it happens to be. It's like, well, okay, so the time didn't magically come. Like, you didn't get an extra hour in the day. You didn't get an extra day in the week. It's that when something became important to you, other things moved to the side. And so the question is, well, how can we treat the things that are truly important to us with that level of urgency, right? That they become this thing that we are dedicating ourselves to get to no matter what. And, you know, some people have more things going on than others, but I truly do believe that we can build the lives we want in the time that we have.
How do you get past the dynamic of that which I say I want to do, I don't do, right? So we have our conscious mind, our speak out of, and our unconscious mind that we act out of. So how many people in the last 45 days have had a goal? They ate too much over the holidays. They've been eating too much since October. I know I need to exercise. I know I want to eat better. I want to look better. I want to improve my health numbers. And I say that, and they buy the new gear and buy the new joggers or buy the new piece of equipment. And it's the middle of February, and the surveys say that 90% of the people will have dropped off those New Year's resolutions. How do you get through this dynamic between a stated priority and actually a priority of the heart?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of treadmills with clothes hanging on them now.
Right.
That it turns out that they're a good place to store the laundry.
Right.
No, I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons that, you know, things we say we want to do don't wind up happening in our lives. Sometimes it's because we haven't structured our lives to make it possible. I mean, we need to be very, very specific here. You know, people say, I want to eat more healthfully. Well, what does that even mean? Okay, well, let's come up with something specific. I want to eat more fruits and vegetables. Well, what does that even mean? Okay, I want to eat this number of servings per day. What does that look like in terms of your meals? Okay, fine. I'm having a piece of fruit with breakfast. Hey, now we have something we can actually potentially do and hold ourselves to. So I think, you know, there's lots of ways we can think about starting small, being very specific and all that. But, you know, I think fundamentally people need to ask themselves, I mean, what do you truly want to do? What is motivational for you? It is quite possible that you don't care about looking better in your jeans. I mean, you know, I'm sure I could stand to lose 5 to 10 pounds. I've realized I just don't care about fitting into my old clothes. But there are other things that I do care about, right? Like I do care about being able to, you know, play on the floor with my 4-year-old. I do care about being able to run around the house doing the things I have to do. I do care about, you know, feeling like I have enough energy to handle my life. And so those are things that I find a little bit more motivational. And so sometimes I think people need to dig deep and say, well, if this part isn't motivational, is there something else? And how can I follow that and line my life up to make that more possible?
And some people, the highest priority is to fit into those
Which
jeans.
Bless God bless you if you. It you is.
Know, in yeah. many ways, I wish I had that myself. I wish I had the vain gene. Mine has been more productivity and relationship driven. You know, I got grandkids now. And so that resets your goals and your expectations and things like that. In your book, you mentioned that people often ask the question, how do I do it all? But you point out what they're really asking is, how can I enjoy more of the short time I have on this planet? You know, we have a program around here we call Do It Now for both your business and your life. It's about getting those priorities and saying, okay, if I actually live with the concept that there's an end date here, it creates this little bit of a sense of urgency, not panic, but a sense of urgency to help the priorities and to go do it. How can people enjoy the short time they have on the planet a bit more? I mean, you have some great, great insights on this.
Well, it's a big question. I mean, I think the key thing that many of us need to do is to actually ask ourselves what we would like to spend more time doing. I mean, time is fundamentally limited, but I think it's also plentiful as well. There's a bit of a paradox here that, you know, people are like, oh, you know, we have no time for anything. Well, you do, in fact. I mean, we have 168 hours in a week. If you work 40 hours or 50 hours or 60 hours, I mean, there's still quite a bit of time once you subtract that from 168. So, you know, there's probably space to do the things that you want to do. You just need to be clear on what are those things. And I think because many of us feel like we have no time, we don't ask ourselves, well, what would I like to do? So, you know, try making lists, like make a list of things you'd like to spend more time on professionally. Things you'd like to spend more time on with friends and family, like in your relationships. Things you'd like to spend more time on personally, like for your own physical, spiritual, emotional health, right? You know, just make long lists of all these things. And then you can start choosing a few that you say, well, could I spend maybe one extra hour a week on one of these things? And, you know, if you feel like you just can't find the space, so, you know, maybe you could spend 1 hour less on something else in life that you know, look at your time and say maybe isn't all that important. But I think getting clear on those things is helpful as a first step.
My mentor, Jim Rohn, used to say this phrase. He goes, Brian, you have all the time there is.
It's true.
You know,
all
and you
the
think
time
about
the world.
It, there's people getting stuff done. There is people getting stuff done. Not to get caught up in comparison, but sometimes we do need to shake the barley a little bit and go, okay, you know, we're a coaching company and our job is to go pull out of people what's in there. We never put anything into somebody they don't have, but pull it out of them. And oftentimes people are surprised by what they have. And like you said, I think it was a brilliant point. When there's a crisis, it's amazing what people can do. I often tell the story. I come from a family. Not only do I have 6 kids, I'm one of 6. And I remember my mother was 44 years of age, which back in Ireland, you know, 44-year-olds weren't getting pregnant very often, you know. And we were on vacation and we had a situation where we had a car run out of gas. We're down this hill and the car takes off from us as we're pushing it down this hill. And as a family, we start chasing after this car. And it was my mom, who was 8 months pregnant at 44, who went past us all and stopped the car. She stopped the, you know, one of those big heavy station wagons and brought it to a halt before it went into a ditch. No way was that in the possible. We were all younger athletes and everything else, but it was in there. Like it was in there, that kind of priority. She wanted to save that baby apparently more than the rest of us, you know? And so it was in there and people can surprise themselves. You've written this book called Tranquility by Tuesday. And I love it because like the way people can hear you, you're full of how-tos and tips, which I'm going to commend you on. We interview hundreds of people and a lot of people have great concepts, but no how-tos. And I always feel like we're just leaving people short. You know, it's like going and hearing a sermon and what do I do with that? I don't know. You have great how-tos along with it. But let's talk concept-wise. What does tranquility mean to you? And then the By Tuesday piece is you have these tools and tips that you share in the book that can help people get a bit more tranquil.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people not only want to get stuff done, they want to feel good about their lives. Like they want to feel that life is not chaotic, that they are in control of it. They are making space for the things that they want to do. There is time for the things that they need to do, the time for the things that are personally rejuvenating. They feel well rested. They feel like they can handle their responsibilities and have time for fun as well. So that's what tranquility sort of means to me. And then, of course, By Tuesday is, well, let's get at that practically. Like, it's not just, you know, tranquility from the mountaintop here. It's like, no, no, no. We're going to choose Tuesday, which is the most ordinary day of the week, right? You know, this is the day where if you're going to make life special and wonderful, if you can do that on a Tuesday, like you have really achieved the top level here. So everything in this book is about how you can make your life better on an average Tuesday. Like how you can make the most of your time in the middle of your ordinary life, which is probably pretty good. You know, I don't want you to change all these things about your life. Your life is probably good. I just want you to take it up a little notch and enjoy this wonderful life you have. So that's where the tips are coming from.
Let's walk through it from you. There's 9 specific tools you shared. Give us a couple of them that you've seen that have been really helpful to help people introduce more of this enjoyment of life and get a little more sense of peace and enjoy as they're going through their busy day.
Yeah, well, we certainly don't need to go through all 9 of them. We'd be here forever. But a couple that I think have been particularly transformative for people and thinking about entrepreneurs in particular might find helpful. One, which this is so basic, it's rule number 1. Somebody called it the least sexy but the most impactful rule is to give yourself a bedtime. So most adults have to wake up at a certain time in the morning for either work or family responsibilities. So that time can't really move. You have a certain amount of sleep that you need. You can pretend you don't, but you probably need a certain amount of sleep. It is generally better to get that amount every single night than to, you know, scrimp on it during the week and try and crash on the weekends to make up or anything like that. You want to just get that amount every night. So if there's a time we need to wake up, we can count back the amount of sleep we need, and this gives us a bedtime, right? It's math. Like I have to be up most mornings at 6:30 a.m. I need 7.5 hours of sleep. So we count back. I need to be in my bed with the lights out at 11 p.m., right? If you need to wake up at 6 a.m. and you need 8 hours of sleep, you need to be in bed by 10 p.m. If you, you know, need 7 hours of sleep and you can wake up at 7 a.m., then you can be in bed at midnight. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter. I'm not judging anyone here. It is just a math problem. But if you figure out what that bedtime is, it starts giving shape to your whole day. Like, we know when our day is beginning. We're often a bit fuzzier on this notion that each day has an end, but it does. And there is a set amount in this container based on how much sleep you need to function. And once you know what that space looks like, you can be far more orderly about what you choose to fit into this container that you have. So figure out your bedtime, you know, commit to kind of winding down before that. Just if you're doubting me, do it for a week, see how it goes. I promise you, your life will start to feel a lot better.
Right. There's a lot of research on it. And there's also the circadian rhythms and turn off your phone. Like one of the habits I have that I've developed is, and one of the reasons I got into it, right, we drift into these bad habits. is I have a daughter that competes all over the world in equestrian riding for the U.S. So she might be in Germany or she might be here. She might be there, 9-hour time difference. My parents still live in Ireland, 92 and 93 years of age, and I'm always a little bit on alert. So I would have my phone by my bed. Of course, I'd find myself checking it and looking at it and doing this and doing that. And now it's like, hang on a second here. So I actually intentionally go down to my office in my home and I plug my phone in at night so I don't have my phone by my bed so that I actually can get some sleep and stop being a fireman checking the phone. Because then I check the phone and then checking the news feed. And then next thing you know, I'm waking up the next day. I didn't get that rest. And so as simple as that sounds, the world we live in today, those things are not simple. Like, you know, it was simple 100 years ago because we were all working on a farm and people were exhausted because they were working with their bodies. And our minds were working with our minds and our minds are hyperactive and the body hasn't been moved. It was simpler. You didn't have to tell people have a bedtime 100 years ago. You got to do it today, right? And I've heard a lot of people talk about the start of the day, and I'm big on the start of the day, but that makes sense that you finish your day at the right time. So you're actually starting your day the night before.
Yep. A good morning starts the night before. So, you know, that's one practical tip. You know, you mentioned the body doesn't move. That's another rule. I think it was rule number 3, if I'm counting in here, is to move by 3 p.m. So, you know, I'm challenging people. Not, you don't have to go to the boot camp thing, run 10 miles before breakfast. Like, if you're into that, go for it. That's awesome. Most of us are not. But all of us have bodies that respond better to physical activity than non-activity. And so let's not view physical activity as fitting into the skinny jeans again. This is about managing your energy. Like, everybody needs breaks during their day. And by proactively planning in a little bit of physical activity to a time when your energy is dipping, you realize that you can change your energy levels, right? Like, you're not just stuck where you are. You can pause. You can do something and get yourself back up there and bring your best self to the rest of the day. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, people spend all kinds of time and effort and money and all this trying to make themselves happier and more energetic. And it turns out that like a 10-15 minute walk outside, especially, will do it reliably, like 90% confidence that you're going to come back feeling more energetic and happy. You know, it's free. It doesn't have any side effects. Like, you know, why don't we take advantage of it? So,
you know, I grew up in Ireland as a family of painters. So I learned to work with my hands since I was a kid and so on and so forth. And then I come to the States and I became a different type of worker. I became a guy that worked with his mind. And I go home exhausted, but I hadn't moved all day. And that's the great trap. When I was lifting ladders and climbing up scaffoldings, you were moving your body all day long. You came home physically tired and fairly mentally refreshed. So like now I was telling my son, we bought a house. I was helping him paint the house. He's like, Dad, why aren't we hiring a painter? I said, because I need it for my brain. But I think one of the things that we have in our world today is most of us are working with our minds, working on computers, not working physically. And you can feel tired, but you didn't move. And I love that. Move by 3 o'clock. It gives plenty of time. It's kind of proven beyond all reasonable doubt. If you just move the body, and a walk is as good as anything.
As good as anything. And then just one more. I'll give you one more real quick. This is a rule number 6, but it's one big adventure, one little adventure. And I think what this rule is about is many of us live lives that kind of start involving just a lot of work, a lot of family responsibilities. Days look the same. You know, you get up, you do your work, you come home, you deal with your family, you go to bed, you do it all over again. And there's nothing wrong with routines because routines make good choices automatic. But when too much of this sameness stacks up, then time becomes completely indistinguishable. Like, was that this year? Was it last year? You know, what was
Groundhog
February?
Day.
What was November? Who even knows what any of this, what day is it? I don't even know. But we can change that and make time more memorable by putting in things that are a little bit out of the ordinary. So this routine of each week, you want to have one big adventure and one little adventure. So a big adventure, you know, is just a couple hours, let's say, you know, 3 hours or so, like half a weekend day. A little adventure could be less than an hour. So you could do it on a lunch break, a weekday evening, just as long as it's something out of the ordinary. And, you know, everyone's threshold for adventure may be slightly different. There's some people who, you know, they have to sail like a Viking around the fjords for it to be an adventure. But others of us, it might be like, I want to try that new gelato place, which can also be adventurous. But, you know, figure out what would, you know, go to that new park that, you know, is an hour away and go hiking there on the weekend, or, you know, go to that tulip festival, go try shopping in a different town somewhere at a cool store you want to see. All of this could be an adventure that you would put into your life. And this rhythm of one big adventure and one little adventure each week, it's not enough to exhaust or bankrupt anyone, but it is enough to make time feel different. Because, no, that wasn't just a Tuesday like any other. That was the Tuesday we tried that new gelato place. And that just makes time feel a little bit more thick and rich.
Well, I'll give you an application. I read the book, and you know, when I'm busy right here, I get on the freeway, the 5 freeway, and I fight the traffic and I get home. When I plan it right, I give myself about 15 more minutes to get home or a half hour. And I go the coast road, the Pacific Coast Highway, and I go by 4 beaches. So I'm able to see the ocean and whatever else. And if I really do it right, I get off at the last beach and I go for this walk. So I read the book and I went, you know what? I go by 4 beaches. And I've said this many times on this podcast. I only ever stop at the one. So I said, okay, here's my little adventure for the day. And I stopped off at a place that I would say I've, for the last at least 10 years, I've gone by 4 times a week. And I had not gone out and walked that beach in 10 years. And it shocked me. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know this was here. And then I'm like, hang on, I got 2 more beaches I go by every day. And so it was wild. And it felt like I was learning, I was discovering, it was out of the ordinary. And like you say, the routines are great to keep us on track, but it can turn into Groundhog Day and then you're trapped. It's a game changer. It opened up this whole possibility of my drive home.
Yeah. Whoa, you just made a commute on a Tuesday. Be an adventure. I love that.
People can tell how practical and helpful and super applicable all this stuff is. And there's these 9 tools all laid out there and you do a great job and all the background on it. One concept I'd love you to kind of explore that I think is something you're talking about that really nobody's really talking about right now is shifting from this 24-hour mindset to this 168-hour mindset. I just love your take on it. Obviously, I've danced around all this stuff my career, but I'm curious to know why this came to you and what's behind it.
Yeah, well, it's sort of embarrassing that I didn't even know there were 168 hours in a week until I really started writing about this. And I was coming up with the title for my first time management book, and this number kept appearing. And I'm like, oh, what is this? 168. And so it turns out there are 168 hours in a week. It's 24/7. People say 24/7 all the time. People do not multiply it through for whatever reason. I don't know, but it's been helpful, at least for, you know, at least somewhat distinguishing my work from other people, because I'm like, this number is here. But yeah, it's a week is the unit of life that we actually live in, right? Because if you think about it, a Tuesday and a Saturday both occur just as often. But for many people, they look at least somewhat different. And so, you know, to get a good picture of your life, you couldn't just show someone a Tuesday, because that's not all your life, right? There's a couple days a week where that doesn't look like that at all. So you want to show somebody a unit that includes Tuesday and Saturday. And so the unit of repeat, as the mathematicians would put it in the pattern of our lives, is a week. And so, you know, it's important to think of our weeks holistically for many reasons. I mean, one, just from a planning perspective, if you plan your life in weeks, you're not caught up so much in the day to day. I mean, we can generally see a week forward with some certainty. The far future, who even knows? But we can see the next week with fairly good certainty. So you can start planning things with the assumption that they truly will happen, or at least know roughly what will go wrong. And then you can also make sure that you're not tied up against certain deadlines that come from a 24-hour mindset. Like, you've got something huge you've got to get in on Wednesday, and then Tuesday's busy for some reason. Like, if you knew that ahead of time, you would carve out time on Monday to deal with that. Then your life would be a lot more calm. There would be a lot less chaos. And so, you know, I encourage people to do that. But it's also about seeing how much space we have. And I think some of the, you know, busiest people have actually looked at where all 168 hours of their lives go, and have been surprised at just how much space they still have. Just, you know, basic math. I know we're dealing with entrepreneurs here, but bear with me. Like, if you're working 40 hours a week and sleeping 8 hours a night, so that is 56 hours per week. 7 times 8 is 56. Subtract these two from 168 hours. You get 72 hours, right? Now, is that enough time to see your family, to have a hobby? I would like to think that 72 hours can include all those things. I mean, you're working 50 hours, you've got 62 hours for other things. You're working 60 hours, you got 52 hours for other things. I mean, you might need to be creative about finding the time, but just from a sheer numerical perspective, it is pretty hard to say, like, there's no time to exercise in 52 hours a week. There's no time to read a story with my child in 52 hours a week. There's no time to, you know, volunteer with this group for a cause I'm passionate about in 52 hours a week. Like, it just starts to become a little bit like, yeah, that seems not right. And so, you know, it's, have time. It's not a priority. See how it feels. There might be time somewhere. We can look.
Instead of saying I don't have time, try saying it's not a priority and see how that feels. No question. I had a mentor named Dr. Alex Lackey, who was considered the most organized man in America. And I was a 21-year-old real estate agent, and I went to lunch with him, and he gave me this little journal. And I had not thought about this until I reengaged with your work. And he had me write down, by then he had me set a little timer on my pager. This tells you how old I am. And every 15 minutes of the workday, I would just write down in this journal he gave me what I had done the previous 15 minutes. Now, I know he's going to read it. So I put my best foot forward. When I met with him a week later, I'm telling you, I was shocked at what I wasn't doing. I was shocked when I had to write it down, how much time I was wasting, how much time I was blowing. And then at the same time, this feeling of, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. This feeling of, I have no time. He showed me I was being late for things. He goes, how are you late? You don't have even enough on your schedule. And I'd be like, ugh. And it was just the feeling of overwhelm. And I think this 168 mindset, like you just said, it kind of cuts it through. Oh, it's a half hour walk 5 days a week. That means, okay, it was 2.5 hours. You have 2.5 hours in 168. You know, and everybody knows it. But it takes that excuse out. It takes this frame of reference out. But I think it also can, in positive way, take away this feeling of overwhelm.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's empowering. I mean, sometimes, you know, I always have people track their time. Like, it's my first thing I always tell people to do if they would like to spend their time better, track their time for a week, just as your mentor had you do. And that's a really good exercise because, I mean, people are like, I feel overwhelmed. I feel so busy. It's like, well, let's just look at where the time is truly going. Maybe we can understand why you're so overwhelmed and all that. And for some people, there are reasons and, you know, things that we can look at. But in many cases, people are like, I tell myself a story that I'm overwhelmed and therefore I feel overwhelmed. If I have a different story, like I have time for what matters to me, you know, you approach time a little bit differently.
Maybe you don't have to stream that show the third time. A couple of things. Obviously, the book is brilliant. You guys listening, you know, I recommend Few and Seldom. It's awesome. The work is great. I love how practical and insightful and how useful it is. It's called Tranquility by Tuesday. It's Laura Vanderkam, and you can get this everywhere great books are sold. Laura has some great podcasts she does, so check her out. Laura, I have 5 questions I ask everyone who's ever been on the show. Kind of rapid-fire questions. We were doing this before it was popular, and that just gives a little different insight into the person we're interviewing. So first and foremost, what's the single best piece of advice you've ever been given?
So this is going to sound funny, but it's just because I'm a writer. It's that everything you are writing, you should read it out loud. And that is because even when people are reading silently, they are hearing it in their heads. So if you are writing for the ear, it's going to come across more pleasurably to people, even if they're reading it silently. You know, and a lot of stuff is audiobooks this day and age anyway. So it's probably a good idea to have it read well. But, you know, you can improve any bit of writing by doing that.
Brilliant. Who gave you that advice?
One of my editors at USA Today years ago when I worked there.
What one talent or gift do you wish you possessed that you currently don't?
Well, I am a okay singer. I love to sing. I sing in a choir and truly enjoy it a lot. But we have a couple of professional singers who are part of the choir who have been brought in to make us sound better. And I wish my voice sounded like that. So maybe in another life.
The singing and performing always seems to be the most common.
Well, you know, if we get to
the
angel choirs someday, maybe I'll be able to, you know, sound like that.
There you go. The original Hallelujah
exactly.
Chorus.
Exactly.
What book has been most instrumental in your life?
Well, you know, in terms of sort of regular books that we all read, I think productivity wise, I truly loved Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It was probably one of the first productivity books I read, you know, back in the day. And I've read it a couple of times since, by the late Stephen Covey. Obviously, your listeners all know who he is. And, you know, there's the advice that, you know, people spend a lot of time on things that are urgent and not important. And there's the humorous thing of this book coming out in 1990, which is before everyone had email. So, like, what on earth were we doing that was urgent and not important at that time? But people have been doing stuff that's urgent but not important since we were staring at cave walls, I am sure, right? This is humanity. But, you know, I've reread the book a couple times, and most recently when I reread it, when I have this house full of children, and I realized he had a house full of children too. And, you know, obviously he was a sort of more traditional man, and I know that his wife was primarily responsible for the care of the children, but just through sheer having that many kids, they're involved in his life. They're around, they're climbing through his office in a way that I can totally relate to. So I enjoyed reading it again from that perspective.
Well, I can tell you on a personal note, I had a relationship with Stephen Covey. He wasn't just a great presenter and a great speaker. He was a great dad. In fact, you can tell that because his son carried on the work.
Exactly.
And he wrote books with his son. And so he made time, and he did live first things first. If there's a movie, I mean, you're using your time well and you're chasing the kids and whatever else, but let's say it's before you've decided bedtime and you're scrolling through the channels or whatever else, and there's one movie that comes on. What's the one movie you've watched over and over?
This is kind of sad. I'm not much of a movie watcher, but I am always up for a really good documentary. So I've watched a lot of the Ken Burns ones, like the national parks. You know, there's something about wild landscapes. You know, here I am in the suburbs, and I'm like, ooh, let's look at some raging river somewhere and pretend that, you know, the little creek in my backyard is that.
Well, I'm not a big baseball fan, but I watched Ken Burns on baseball recently, and it made me really interested in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great storyteller.
He is a great storyteller.
Last but not least, Laura Vanderkamp, what does the good life mean to you?
The good life means that I am spending time on the things that are most important to me. Like, I'm deeply involved in a writing project that I'm excited to bring into the world. I'm spending time with people, you know, I love, that my family and I are having good adventures together, and I'm having enough time to read and sing and sleep. And the good news is I really think there is enough time for all those things. So that's a good life to me.
Well, it's wonderful. You have a beautiful message, and a very, very timely message in a world that's currently just enveloped in catchy little soundbite solutions for everything. It's really practical. It's really beautiful. A real person, a real mom, living a real life, and it's great stuff. I love the book. I highly recommend it. It's Tranquility by Tuesday. Great insights. I continue to check your podcasts out. And thanks for being our guest today. You really have added a lot of value to a lot of people. And I think you've probably helped a lot of folks who will be able to take more advantage of this wonderful 168 hours we get every week and live it better.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura. We're going to finish off today with someone who's knows the value of time. She's a 93-year-old sweetheart who's been my greatest influence in life. And she's going to leave us today with a little Irish blessing.
May the road rise up to meet you, and may the wind always be at your back. May the rain fall soft upon your fields, and the sun shine warm upon your face. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. See you next time.